Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Pounder with cheese and France, Mickey. What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly saw sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You are listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave. And yes, the guys are out this week. Both are actually medical-related issues. JD was screaming at teenage boys all weekend and lost his voice. It sounds worse than it is. He's a high school wrestling coach. And of course, John has another issue. I don't know if he wants me to talk about it on air, but he couldn't make it tonight, which he told me about 5 minutes before we were supposed to start. That's a whole nother story. But in this place, I have two guests for you guys tonight, returning for his fifth time on the show, but he hasn't been on since 2015. We have the one and only James C. Maddox. How you doing, sir?
Hi. How's it going?
And
I can't believe it's been that long. I'm sorry. Jesus.
It's perfectly fine. And joining him is artist extraordinaire Dave Stoll. How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, listen, can we just call JD's injury what it is? He was at a One Direction concert, right? That's what that was?
That is perfect.
Screaming too loud.
Screaming at those boys.
Yeah. And if you know JD, that's even more perfect. So, yeah.
I don't, by the way. I'm sorry, JD. I just made that crack at you, and you aren't even here to protect yourself from that. That's my bad.
So... Before we talk about to you, Dave, James, how are you doing? Because the last thing that I saw, big thing I saw about you all over Facebook, was you were in a little bit of an accident.
Yeah, back in August, it was me and my wife and a friend of ours were in a car, and we just got torrential downpour of rain, and we hydroplaned off the interstate and flipped the car twice. And she got out with Mary got out with like a bruise on her shin that was about the size of a quarter. My friend Christopher got kind of hit in his eye area and a little scratch on his back. And then I got what doctors term a degloved forehead.
Ouch.
Yeah, so I'll let your imaginations run wild with that one. But yeah, so I spent a little bit of time in the hospital, and everybody just kind of like, you know, helped me to pull through, and here I am. It was funny. I was in the hospital for I think it was like 5 days total, and then I spent another like week at home resting. And then I kind of got cabin fever, and we were supposed to play a show, with my band that I'm in, Quiet. And it was just like a short 15-minute set. It was like a showcase thing. And so I was like, I'm going to do that. And then the next week I was like, I'm going to go to Rose City Comic Con. I flew across the country. You have to stay active, you know, no matter what.
Cool. Yeah, the reason I brought it up, not to bring up bad memories, I was kind of curious, as a musician and an artist, you know, a writer, does going through something like that change your perspective on life?
No. It's all the same. Nothing phases me, man. Come on. No, it was just kind of messed up because, like, 2018 was the year of just peaks and extremely low valleys. So like medical things happened, you know, but on the plus side, we got a series greenlit, and I don't know, it was like all these things got in a huge wreck. And then right there at the tail end, my wife was like, "Oh, by the way, I'm pregnant." And I was like, "Of course you are. It's 2018. So the goods and the bads were heavy that year. And so far, 2019 has been all good. So I'm hoping to keep that trend.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. Congratulations on the child on the way. So Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? So you're an artist. Is comic book art something you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, you know what? My deal is kind of weird because everybody, you know, all of our acquaintances, you know, they're always like, "Oh, we grew up reading comic books. You know, we were into this artist and this series growing up." And like, I really wasn't. I didn't get into comics until maybe mid high school. But the interesting part about that is that I've been drawing comics since elementary school. Like, I think that my very first comic that I drew was like a little thing that I did in lunch, at lunchtime, in elementary school, called The Ravenous Cocktail Weenies, about radioactive cocktail sausages that like came to life and tried to eat people back. And, I used comics as like a coping mechanism, as like a, you know, drawing in the margins of homework and stuff like that. Yes. So like, I've been doing comics for like forever, and it didn't really dawn on me that this was something that like I could do until I was in high school and some friends of mine were like, you know, "Oh, you know, have you read, it was like Ultimate X-Men that like got me into the thing." And, so like we would read, X-Men when we were supposed to be studying and stuff like that, of course. And, I kind of saw like my friends really used comics to like kind of identify with some of the stuff that was going on, you know, in their heads, right? Like, being a teen is kind of tumultuous and interesting. And, comics really like help them like deal with some of the stuff going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool for me. So I, from high school, I went, I got like a bachelor's degree in, oil painting. And then straight from there went to the Savannah College of Art and Design, where I got my master's degree in sequential art. And I've been a comic artist for the past like 5 or 6 years. So it was kind of like a straight jump from like no comics into immediately comics and everything comics. So, wow. So that's been my travels.
A master's in sequential art. I don't know if we had anyone on the show before that has a master's in sequential art.
Well, SCAD kids are ubiquitous. They're kind of everywhere. So I'm sure that you'll get at least one or two other, SCAD kids on the show if you keep going. But, it was really bizarre because, at that point I had a fine art degree. Right. And so I came in and I did not know as much about comics as I probably should have if I was a grad student studying comics. So like, my first couple of classes were these like smash courses through all of the fundamentals of comics, like what page layout was and pacing and everything like that, you know, the fundamentals of inking and penciling and coloring and everything like that. So like, I got a whirlwind instruction in comics from SCAD, and that's been really good for me.
Cool. So, you said you've been doing it for 5 years now. What was one of your first projects you did after school?
Let's see. I've been working on a couple of, kind of independent books. So one of my first projects was a book called, A Journey with Strange Bedfellows, which was an adaptation from an audio drama that goes along with it, and is meant to kind of be an instruction-based series. So it's kind of supposed to go into packets to help people learn how to read, I think is how it was put to me. So, okay. That was a 150-page graphic novel that that I did and completed. And that's still out there somewhere. But as far as other large projects, Metaphorical Her, I think, is the biggest one that that James and I have been doing yet.
Cool. So 150 pages, how long did that take?
Oh, that was a good maybe 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
that's why, I mean, it's one of the things I'm sure James might remember, why I like talking to artists and writers, because people don't realize how long this stuff takes to produce and to produce well, you know? And when as soon as I hear an artist say 150 pages, I'm like, that is a huge chunk of your time.
Yeah. That was my life for a good portion of it. And, you know, I'll be honest. I'm pretty happy to be moving on to other projects.
So then how did you hook up with James, and where'd Metaphysical Her come from?
Well, James and I met at, what was it, Baltimore Comic Con? And that was maybe like 7-ish years ago.
No, it hasn't been that long. Oh, come on. It's
23 years ago. And back when the dinosaurs were still around, you know, conventions are the perfect place for writers to meet artists and things like that. So I was tabling with Jan Hickman, with whom James did the Dead comic book.
Yes.
And James, with his usual kind of, you know, suaveness, walked up to the table and was like, "What's up, guys? You guys want to do some pitches?" And Jen and I were like, "Let's do it." So Jen did the Dead with James, and then he and I had a Western pitch that didn't quite go anywhere, except for a pretty cool short story that is still pretty cool.
It's probably one of my favorite things to put out on the table these days.
It's a good one.
Just saying.
Yeah. And I mean, we've known each other kind of ever since, really. Yeah. And James had the idea for a Metaphorical Her, what, like, not last year at Emerald City, but maybe a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And he kind of just was like, "Hey, I want to do this thing. Do you want to do this thing with me?" And I was like, "Hell yeah," because I know how good James is as a writer. So that was kind of how that started for me.
Yeah, the way that Metaphorical really got kicked into existence, it was like just kismet, because all the things lined up, you know? So like Dave was looking for a project, his art's fantastic. I know I can like trust him to do the good deeds of storytelling. And you know, that worked out perfectly. Becca Caden, our editor, was looking to bring on new projects, and she got really excited to do this story with us. So, you know, that was another thing that just kind of like lined up. And then from there, you know, it continues to be this ever evolving, ever growing project. And I don't know, it's my favorite thing to work on, because I get to infuse everything that I love about poetry, everything I love about comics, all my experiences on the road, like just all of it's coming together in this one story. So it makes me happy.
So then that leads me to the question that is on every listener's mind. So what is like the elevator pitch?
Nah, man, I can't. I'm not doing that. I don't do that for anybody, damn it. Dave, can you do this?
Yeah, sure. So here's the deal, because Metaphorical Her kind of eschews elevator pitches. You can't be like, "This is what it's immediately about," because what Metaphorical Her is about people having ambition and like trying to be their best selves, you know, no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. Right. And it kind of feels like a sitcom a little bit, because every episode kind of ties you into each character a little bit like nicer and a little bit more tight, so that they become real people as you're reading it. But I can't sit there and tell you like Metaphorical Her is about, well, Metaphorical Her is about a poet who gets blacklisted from her community and finds a spotlight on stage in front of rock bands. Tell you about like the struggle that the community that they build with each other. So it kind of, you kind of have to just be like, it's about people trying real hard. But we do have a cool gimmick, which is that since our main character is a poet who's been blacklisted, all of the metaphorical language in her head and all of the descriptive language that she would use gets represented visually without any filter to kind of hold your hand, right? So like, I think what panel like 3 of our comic is our main character committing career suicide, and she just kind of pulls out a gun and blows her brains out in the middle of telling somebody off.
I was going to say that explains the cover image that I saw on James' website. Very much so.
Yep. And that's exactly it. Like we set out at the beginning to really kind of stun people and to, you know, to get that reaction of like, oh my God, what the hell just happened? And so, yeah, panel three, Lainey blows her brains out. And then like a little while after that, she's hanging out with kind of a one night stand. And he like gives her his heart by like reaching into his chest and giving her his heart. And she rejects him by like throwing it down a flight of stairs. So it's just a really trippy slice of life comic.
Cool. That does sound very interesting. And it's,
yeah, that's the, I mean, the whole point of it is to keep us engaged, to keep the reader engaged. Like we want to make sure that we're, I don't know, like locked into this type of story. And I think utilizing this particular like visual aid in comics, especially, it helps everybody just kind of like A, parse out what the hell is going on. It helps inform the story. It's visually appealing. Like all of these factors come into the, you know, into the idea of using visual metaphor as a means of conveying the story. Right. That when it hit me, I was just like, of course, this is what we're doing. Like I didn't second guess it. You know, later when, you know, when I was trying to explain it to certain people or when the readers were like, what the hell is going on? I was like, oh, maybe people aren't as quick to get on this train as I thought, you know?
It is a difficult one to pitch.
Yeah, but that was where we got super lucky with, you know, people that believed in us. And Webtoon so far has showed that they believe in us. And I, you know, A, I really appreciate that, but because, you know, it's good to have a publisher that's got your back.
Right.
Even when the story might not be like so straightforward as I've got a coming of age story and I've learned that I've got, you know, some powers and here I am learning how to deal with my life now that I have these things happening. Like that's an easy sell.
Right.
You know? But like something like what we're doing, you know, not to say that we are like totally high-minded or anything like that, because we do get down and dirty. But it just, it takes like an extra paragraph. That's why when people are like, what's the elevator pitch? I'm just like, fuck, I know nothing. There is no elevator in this building. There are only stairs. Okay.
You know,
well, because, and I, oh, okay. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to reiterate that, like, again, the elevator pitch is literally like, our main character is a poet that gets blacklisted and then finds a place to do her art. And that doesn't tell you about like the way that we tell our story or, you know, or the fact that like part of Lainey's journey is figuring out how to trust in her friends and trust in herself. So like it is a difficult one to pitch, but James is right in that like we've gotten really lucky with our audience because at the beginning a bunch of people were like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what this comic is, but I'm still going to read it. And by now we've got like what, 12 episodes up and people are like, oh my God, I love this. And so it's like, it's that slow burn hook that like really gets them and people have been really responding well to it.
Yeah. Cool. So I have to say that what I was going to say is that following the books that I've read from you, James, this seems like a logical direction. Because a lot of your stuff, and it's why I like your writing, is kind of cerebral, and it makes you think. So now you're just taking that and marrying it more with the art, and it just seems like a brilliant way to go, you know?
Yeah, I tend to fall into like the more cerebral storytelling style. I've noticed that. I mean, even like the horror show had, even though it had like so many Twilight Zone twists and influence, like, at the most part, it was just like, how would you feel if you were the monster? How would you, like, how would you get your mind around the fact that you're doing some really shitty shit, but you kind of have to, you know? So with that approach, I'm not going to lie. I was worried when I thought about taking on this kind of story. Because I mean, It's a lot to make, it's a lot to get into because you're not only dealing with like the art side of things, you're dealing more with the emotional well-being and the emotional attachments of the characters.
Right.
And, you know, that's, I'm happy that I feel like I've done a good job with it. I'm happy. Like when I read it, I'm like, yeah, that's what I was trying to get across. So yeah.
Cool.
So that's, you said you have five episodes up at this point?
Oh, at this point? We got
12.
Yeah, we have 11 of the story. We just posted up a Q&A where we reached out and said, you know, readers, send us your questions about the series. And we got like a heap of questions in that we answered in visual form.
And that's all through Webtoon, right?
That's correct.
Cool.
Yeah, Webtoon is all digital. It's like you can read it on your browser. Mm-hmm. But the better way to read it is via the app that you download on your smartphone.
Right. Cool. And you said you had the publisher behind you, but was there any issues getting them behind you or?
No, from the get-go. Everybody's just really excited to try us out.
Cool.
Yeah, which was really cool because we are not Webtoon's normal audience. Right, a lot of Webtoon readers will go to Webtoons for, you know, romance or drama or, mm-hmm. you know, the odd superhero book. And we don't fit into literally any of that, despite being locked into the, what are we, romance right now on Webtoon? We're in the romance category?
We're in drama predominantly.
Oh, we're in drama. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
have a tag that's romance.
Yeah. Either way, Metaphorical Her doesn't really fit into any of those. It's more slice of lifey. And so, yeah, there was some like consternation about, is this going to hit people just right? And I think that's, we got a little bit of a slow start going off, but we've been steadily kind of gaining ranks and numbers, and the comments haven't stopped being positive. So yeah. Like, I'm really happy with the turnout from Webtoon that we've had.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm liking that we were a part of that wave because Webtoon is expanding like what they do. So like there's a lot more, you know, genre like sci-fi and horror and all that kind of stuff, like superhero stuff that is coming out through Webtoon. So they're trying, or they've actually been doing a great job with bringing in people that, you know, regular comic crowds, like the local comic shop crowds are starting to see people like Warren Ellis doing Webtoon stories, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's great that, I don't know, that they gave us a platform to kind of see what we could do. And so far, like, I'm like super ecstatic about everything. So
yeah. Same.
Same.
So same. I'm curious. I think some of our listeners might be, when you approach something that's purely digital versus something that's going to be a floppy. Is there a different approach to A, how you write it, and then B, how you think about the layouts and the art?
Yes, absolutely. From the way that Webtoon specific works, it's a vertical scroll, right? So you're just continuously scrolling down the comic and getting, you know, the beats delivered in that way. And in that way, like traditional comics, when you flip the page, you have the page reveal and all that kind of stuff, right? So with us, though, for Metaphorical, it's everything that you scroll is a new, you know, reveal. Mm-hmm. So I look between what I'm doing with something like, you know, Dead Legends or Ogden Falls, where it's traditional page by page comic, and seeing that my scripting for those stories is way different than what we're doing with Metaphorical Her, because what we're doing with the Webtoon series, A, it's episodic in the sense that it comes out every week, right? So that means that my beats have to play a lot more, they're a lot more stretched out than, you know, say a 20, 24 page comic book, single issue, right?
Right.
And also I have to take into account the idea of the vertical scroll, not only the beats that vary in between the way that you perceive that, but also the way that we can manipulate that vertical format. So like in this, you know, we're going to go back to this because it's always the one that's in the first episode, but there's a scene where she throws Jerry's heart down the stairs, and it bounces down the stairs. And you scroll as you follow the trail that this, you know, splattering heart makes.
Right.
And we can do that because it's a vertical scroll, and it plays to that type of visual very well. So now, as far as the artwork goes, like Dave, you can go on that.
Yeah, I mean, and I just want to like throw in that I think that the difference here is less digital comics versus traditional comics, because you know you've got Comixology that's kind of blending that line,
right?
But I think that like the big media difference here is actually just Webtoon. I think that comics on Webtoon read not noticeably but significantly different than regular comics. And it's like James said, where like every page is not a beat. Instead you have this infinite scroll, and there's this element of the time that it takes you to scroll that like that changes the storytelling aspect of the comic. So like a lot of our shot calls are different than a normal print comic. For instance, like we don't have as many we don't have as many establishing shots. Mm-hmm. And I don't change up my camera as often as I would with a print comic. Like in a print comic, I would try to get like long shots and medium shots and close shots and establishing shots all on one page, just to kind of like vary it up enough that the reader can do that. But for Webtoon, the reading experience is so much more intimate that a lot of our shots are just medium shots. And there might be like one or two establishing shots, and there might be a couple of long shots, but for the most part, you're reading this thing on your phone, and a lot of that detail is going to get missed. So a lot of the action happens a lot closer. So the story pacing is much different than in a normal comic.
Yeah, actually, that brings a great point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, you would miss a lot of detail scrolling through like that, or not miss it, but necessarily wouldn't pay as much of attention to it as you would in a
exactly. Yeah, and originally, like in episode one, I think that I had like a long shot of the Lainey's apartment room, and we had to scrap it in exchange for like a closer shot on her because you're vertically scrolling, the shot that I had was a horizontal panel. Mm-hmm. And that would come out really, really tiny on your phone. So you can't have widescreen panels anymore, basically, without sacrificing some of the visuals. And that takes away, like a lot of like wide establishing shots and things like that.
Okay. So does that make it, do you feel that makes it more difficult or easier?
I think it's just different is the thing. I don't think it's more difficult, mostly because it takes away establishing shots, but also the vertical scroll gives you a whole lot of things to play with. So like that heart bouncing down the stairs, and like, you know, a lot of other things that we've played with, we have an episode coming up where like the camera starts at the end of a field and it scrolls and pans down the field and then winds up upside down looking at the other end of the field behind you. And there are tools that the vertical scroll gives you that are different, which starting out was a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be. And, you know, I had my own artist hissy fits where I was like, this needs to be an establishing shot. I want to do this. And then, you know, we had to have our editor like talk me down and be like, no, Dave, like it's going to get lost. You can't do this. So I definitely threw my temper tantrums, but once I figured out how to utilize the vertical field, it just turned into something that was, it's just a different monster than print comics is.
Right. Okay, cool. So James, you had mentioned, the other book that you're, currently promoting, and you sent me a preview copy of, Dead Legends.
Yes.
Again, amazing. But so I do have a question. When I looked at it, it's a very important question. Was this inspired by books from the 70s?
Oh yeah. Well, more to the point, like films from the 70s.
Okay. Cause
like, you know, I mean, Enter the Dragon, basically Gavin wanted to do like a, blood sport, kind of like that kung fu throwback type of thing. So that's kind of what we rocked with.
Cool. It just felt like, just looking at that art, it felt like this needs to be on newsprint on a on a 70s floppy, like, it just has that feel to it.
Yeah, it was.
Man, that'd be great if you guys could get that printed on newsprint. That'd be so tight. Right.
just like a big periodical, you know?
Yeah. Like a phone book?
Yeah. No, that kind of stuff interests me. I don't know why I want everything done in different formats, because I've had things that go on, you know, regular comic styles. We've got the different, you know, thing with the digital format. There was a story that me and Dave and Morgan Beam worked on for Webtoon that I wanted it to be. I wanted to be able to show it at a table, right? So I got the idea to make it into a scroll. And I think at the end I was like scoping out what it would take to print this thing out, and it was going to be like 4 inches by 77 feet long or something like that. So, which I still think that I can make that happen. I just have to find like a really, really big banner printer or something that
find someone who's a draftsman.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like somebody that prints out blueprints.
Yes.
And then back when I was doing Clown, I had the idea to continue the storyline of that story, but like I wanted to work in the world of it and not necessarily continue the storyline. So like I made a newspaper, like a newspaper, like 12-page newspaper. So yeah, I mean, anything's possible, I guess. If you know the right printers, anything's possible.
Right. This is true.
But I think one of the things that we're going to be doing for Metaphorical, which I'm hoping everybody's cool with this, is I'm gonna do a coloring book, because like it's not going to be able to be put into print because we're focusing, you know, majorly on the digital thing. But I also want something like if somebody reads and comes to like, you know, Emerald City or C2E2, those are my next shows. If somebody comes to the table at those shows and they're like, I really like Metaphorical Her. Do you have anything that you can give me? Like, we have promo cards that we can sign and hand over, but that's not like an experience. That's just a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So Dave and I sat down and came up with the idea of doing a coloring book that takes some of the best, what we think are the best visual metaphors in the series, and you know, we take the inks and kind of clean them up, and then, you know, we're going to put them on the table and only have like a limited amount so that people have something to pick up. But that's just another format of, you know, thing to get out there.
I'll throw a crazy idea out there.
Okay.
Since it's Webtoon, get a phone case is made up with an image on there and a space where you can sign it.
Yeah.
We should definitely do phone cases.
We should absolutely do phone cases. Oh, okay. I'll credit you for that one, my friend.
There you go. We'll send you a couple of phone cases.
Cool. Yeah, because
I just have to figure out what to put on them. Jeez.
I've always wondered with digital, like, and people that just read digital, how do you, like, the interaction when you meet the artist or the writer that you really like, you can't get something signed. So you can say, oh, I've always got this because I met the person that wrote this that I really liked. You know, so I'm always like, here, can you sign my iPad? You know, like, what's the interaction there? So there you go. You
make up a case. Yeah, it's definitely a conundrum. Yeah. That being said, though, like if any readers are listening, if you bring anything to the table, I'll sign it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Careful. Careful.
Phones, your computers, your cars, like,
yeah, small children, it's fine.
I was gonna say, bring their first board, sign him.
Listen, if somebody ever has me sign their first board, that's a story I'm telling forever.
Yeah, right. One time I was at C2E2 and
then there was just this baby and I had a Sharpie, so I was like, here we go.
Yep, we're doing this.
you ever meet the real diehard fans who have like they got Stan Lee to sign their arm and then they got that tattooed over?
Oh yeah.
I don't like needles, so. But is that that's a goal for you guys, right? Someone comes up, says, sign my arm, I'm going to get a tattooed on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I don't have any
tattoos. Listen, I would love that. Yeah. Listen, there was one time I had a friend of mine bring his friend by our table at Phoenix Comic Con, and he commissioned a Harley Quinn commission for me. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, if this turns out good, I'm going to get it tattooed on me. And I was like, okay, it's not going to turn out great. It's a con commission, but, you know, fine, here we go. So I gave it to him. And then like 3 months later, he was like, hey, so did you see that tattoo? And I was like, what tattoo? And this dude got the Harley Quinn tattooed on his calf. And this was like, this was maybe, I want to say close to like 5 years ago. So I've gotten a lot better since then. And that was like baby fledgling Dave artist, like con commission Harley Quinn. And I was mortified. So.
Yeah. And I can understand that. I have a lot of friends who are artists, and it's like that piece is now permanently out there for everyone to see.
What do? You can't be like, oh no, why'd you do that? Because it's on him.
Right, exactly. I'm friends with Greg Horn, and I help him out at New York and Philly every year. And there's this one guy on his calf. He's got a Wolverine that Greg did years ago on there. You know, it was like one of the first Wolverine covers that he did. And Greg's like, oh, great, thanks. And then whenever he walks away, he's like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Like, holy shit. Why? So yeah, listeners, if you get art from an artist and you want to put it on your body, make sure that they're like 100% okay with that.
So James talked about Dead Legends. Is there anything that else that you're working on, Dave, you want to let people know about?
Honestly, right now, Metaphorical Herd's taking up like all of my time. We're trying to bust out an episode a week, and we're averaging about 9 pages worth of material per episode. So it's been a pretty full schedule. I do have a possible book with Z2 coming out in a couple of years, but that's kind of way on the back burner. Yeah, and yeah. I obviously have a couple of pitches that I want to work up, but right now it's all Metaphorical Herd.
Okay, cool. So actually, you know, while I've got you guys here, your comic book, you're in the business. We normally do a segment on the show when it's just the hosts. We call it social media madness, where basically we take reactions that people have to our show on Twitter and Facebook or whatnot. And last week we did our first episode back for the year, we reviewed both Aquaman and Into the Spider-Verse. So before I'll ask you guys both first, if you've seen both of them and what your reactions are before I get into the little bit of controversy that I've caused online.
Okay. Okay.
So you right. said, well, Dave, did you see?
Yeah. So I've seen Spider-Verse. I haven't seen Aquaman. And Spider-Verse is, I think, my favorite Spider-Man movie of all time.
Okay, that's the typical reaction so far.
Yep, that's where we are.
Yeah, and I saw both of them. And the Spider-Man movie was definitely the better of the two.
Yeah, definitely the better of the two. Do you think it's the best Spider-Man movie of all time?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, like visually it was really pretty. Interactively, like the way that they use certain things, like the thing that like that jumps out to me specifically is when he throws the bagel at the one guy that's chasing him. Yes. And this sound effect is bagel. Yes. that kind of creativity, I don't know. It jumps out to me. It's a little bit irreverent, but it's very, very funny and very witty.
Okay. So not to take anything away from the movie, because I, for the most part, enjoyed it. But I actually can't stand the character of Spider-Gwen. It's just a personal opinion. And, okay. Cause there's, I've always been apartial to, like Spider-Girl is probably my favorite female version of Spider-Man. And then,
well, I was completely lost on what specifically Spider-Gwen, like, is it just that she's from a different dimension?
She's from a different dimension where she got bit instead of Peter.
Right. So, but that's all it is. It's not like in the primary universe that they brought Gwen Stacy back by supernatural or science means.
No.
I mean, in the primary universe, Gwen Stacy came back because she's Carnage.
Really?
We won't even get into that.
I will. I do need to enter in this one little caveat where I am. You could tell me that, you know, she came back 20 times because of, you know, the virus from Resident Evil, and I'd be like, oh, okay, I get it, because I have no idea. Like the majority of, you know, big two comics are kind of lost on me, because it's just not, I read like intermittently just to kind of get a sense of what's going on. But my only real exposure to that stuff is the movies, you know?
Right.
So I don't know like what's following specific storylines. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. But that being said, like, as far as like someone that isn't paying attention to the main Marvel universe of like what the comics are doing, like, you know, it held water for me. Like the only thing that I think about when I think about Gwen Stacy is, you know, she died, and I loved in, what was it, Marvels, where the reporter or whatever was like, it's always good to, you know, see Gwen Stacy again.
Yes.
It's like a sentimental message, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I like that they, you know, like in that sense, didn't bring her back and all that kind of thing. But, you know, Marvel is known for their different universes, and their different universes, like anything can happen, right? So the fact that Gwen Stacy is alive in one of those different universes, and they've incorporated that into one of their main storylines, like, you know, whatever. It's just a way to sell books.
right. So during the episode, I kind of dumped on the movie because of her, you know, and then I gave it a real low rating, and I, you know, but I was being honest. It was because of the character, not because I didn't like the movie. And, I just wanted to point this out before I forgot. Marcellus Reagans, who is, on the So Wizard podcast, he's a friend of the show. He's been on our show before. Had tweeted, this was just right before we got on. Wow, I've never heard Dave be so wrong about a movie than his hot take on Spider-Verse. So glad JD and John are there to straighten him out. So Mark, just so you know, I didn't totally hate it. I just hate that character. Even at that.
Well, it's interesting that people like get so hot about these characters. Like that's I don't know. That in itself is a win for me, I think.
Yeah. Well, and it's like James said, like it's a book selling thing, right? I think that Gwen Stacy started off as like a what if sort of scenario, and then everybody really loved her, and so she got her own book, and you know they built that up from there. It's kind of like Gwenpool, right? Like, it's exactly the same thing, where it was like a what if scenario, and now she's got her own book, and is in all kinds of teams. And so like it's legit that you might not like Gwen Stacy. I personally have never had a problem with Spider-Gwen. And so going in and not having that issue, I got to enjoy the movie for like everything that it was. Cause I really enjoyed that kind of, I mean, I'm going to turn this into a representation thing. Like, I really enjoyed that kind of like tough female main character kind of role model that the movie got to kind of show off.
Yeah, and that's kind of I don't know. That's one of the things that I love, that, you know, comics are not, if that character is not what you're looking for, guess what? It's not for you.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So go find something else to read and don't waste your time on. Like, there were so many people that came down on the, what was it? The Cosmic Ghost Rider that Donny Cates worked up.
And
I read that. I read that mini. And I thought it was great. Like, I, again, but I don't take these characters to heart as much as I've seen other people do. But that being said, I thought it was funny for one, and you know, it was well written. So why not?
Yeah. So other than the characters in Spider-Verse, sorry, my phone just buzzed at me. Other than the characters, the animation and the writing and the message and everything like that, how did that strike you? Was that on par with what everybody else?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's funny because I'm also, you know, a video game player. It felt like they if you played the Ultimate Spider-Man video game, they tried to do that. They tried to do that kind of animation in the game where it felt like a comic book. And I think they really, you know, I mean, here we are. I think it's 10 years later, eight to 10 years later. Like, the technology is so much better, you know.
Yeah.
It really felt like that. And then I love the fact that Spider-Ham was hand-painted.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like each of them had their own actual, like, each of the spider people had different, like, frame rates and animation styles and creative expressions that influenced them. Like, Penny was a completely different frame rate than any of the other Spider-Men because she was an anime character, which is amazing.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's, I actually heard somewhere they said that, it took, 3 days to render like 5 seconds of animation for this movie because it was like, this had never been done before. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and well, what, they were going back on, like, CG frames and hand-painting over all of that?
Yep.
Like, the amount of effort that went into that movie and just the polish that was put on everything was incredible.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, big success.
Yeah, well, and I just came off, like, playing the Spider-Man video game, so I was all psyched up on that, too. So that probably had a lot for sure.
Yeah, dude, 2018 was the year of Spider-Man. That's great.
Oh yeah. So, so is there anything you guys are since the beginning of the year, which is January, is there anything you guys are looking forward to in 2019?
I've been dedicating just a lot of my time toward Red Dead Redemption. it's slowly taken over my life, and I'm not sad about that. So yeah, I'm gonna say I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with that. I just found two people buried in the snow, frozen. It was a really sentimental scene. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Beyond that,
I'm glad to see your priorities are in order, James.
Beyond that, I'm looking forward to going out into the con existence with Metaphorical out. So that, you know, A, I can talk about it incessantly, and B, like, I can get people hopefully coming to the table and telling me that they've read it and what kind of problems they've had with it, you know, like how it's helped them solve other ones. That'd be good. And then Gavin Smith and I announced after New York City Comic Con that Dead Legends is going to be published by Late Blue World. So we're right now working at getting that ready for release. And, I have a story with Broken Icon Comics called Nightmare Unknown, subtitled Ogden Falls, which is going to be, a very Twilight Zone-ish inspired, horror story. And I got a few more things happening, so we'll see.
Cool. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, similarly, I'm really stoked to get Metaphorical Her out there on the con floor. I think that C2E2 is going to be our big show. James is going to be peddling that at Emerald City, but then C2E2, we're both going to have a table together, and Webtoon is going to have a big presence. So I'm really looking forward to that show. I think it's going to be a blast. Yeah. And other than that, like work-wise, I have a couple of pitches that I'm trying to work up and kind of ship out there. And oh gosh, 2019 is looking kind of bleak because I don't have much more than metaphorical her to say. I'm looking forward to the Captain Marvel movie. That's going to be on my must-see list for sure.
Yes. Yep. And how about Endgame and seeing the resolution to...
Yeah, Endgame I'm excited about, but mostly just because it's going to be a resolution to Infinity War. Right. Like I really liked Infinity War, but Endgame, I feel like almost like depressed happy about it, you know? I feel trepidatious about going to go see Endgame because I'm like, all right, what are you guys going to do to me this time? So it's kind of like I'm going to go see Endgame because I have to, but like it doesn't fill me with then. Anticipation.
Yeah, it's that to me. It's that fear because if Endgame isn't good, does that ruin our enjoyment of Infinity War?
Right. Well, and you know that you can't watch Infinity War on its own, right? Like you're not going to buy the Infinity War Blu-ray on its own and just be like, I feel like this is going to be the movie that I watch tonight. Because then you just end the night with everybody dying, and that's depressing. You have to watch both of them together, right? So if Endgame isn't good, then like, what do you do?
So wait, but then does that mean you can't just watch Empire Strikes Back on its own?
I mean, I guess that's a good point because you can. You could totally do that. But I don't know. I don't know. For some reason in my head, they're not equated.
You can't just watch Weekend at Bernie's 2 on its own. Is that what you're telling me here? Is that the logic that we're playing with? Come on.
Does anyone That's fair. Weekend
there,
at Bernie's
there are
too?
Probably some people out there.
I've been going through this Mary hates me right now. Let's just put it that way. Because I'm watching like really bad, like I'm going to watch Demolition Man. I'm going to watch like the original Judge Dredd. You know, not just the one, but like all of those that came from that, you know, early mid 90s era or even late 80s. I've been going through that and they're all bad. They're all just not good at all.
It blows my mind that someone that can write as well as you do could enjoy movies like that.
That's one of those things where you like witness the thing that goes wrong and then figure out why it's wrong. Yeah.
That makes sense.
It's a cautionary tale.
Cool. So you mentioned, so you said C2E2 will be your big con this year. Any other big ones you guys are hitting that you want people to check you out at?
As of right now, like my schedule is kind of up in the air, but I'm definitely doing Emerald City, I got a table there, and then I'm doing C2E2 the very next weekend, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And then
that's a weekend at Bernie James. We're just going to like tape him to the chair, glasses on.
I'm just buying bottles of liquor and getting through the day. But yeah, outside of that, obviously I'll be at Tricon in Huntington, West Virginia, on June 8th. Because I own it with my buddy Eric.
Yes.
And outside of that, like, I don't know. A lot of the shows I went to last year, I don't know if I'm going to go back to, but that's mainly because, you know, we're going to be gearing up for a little, and so that'll be fun.
Yeah. So no New York?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm totally going to New York. Oh, okay. I got plans for New York this year.
Is that where you're going to get your child baptized?
Yeah, just christened in the middle of the aisle.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're getting near the end here, and there's a question we normally wrap up on that James has answered a few times. So it's Dave, you're in the hot seat.
Ooh, all right, let's do this.
And it's an easy question, I think. How do you measure success?
Ooh, how do you measure success? As in, like, as in, what do I call success, or as in, how do you keep track of your success?
That's the point. It's up to your interpretation.
Oh, it's open. It's open. I see. It's so open. Gosh. I'm gonna go real boring with it. I think that I would measure success as being able to live comfortably doing what you do, right? So like, so a lot of our favorite artists draw comics and they live comfortably with families in houses. I think that that's successful. And it's not necessarily like people lined up around the block to come buy your comic and have you sign it. I think it's more personal than that. I think it's like it's accomplishing the things that like you set out to do and being able to continue doing that. I think that that's success. Is that too open?
No, that's perfect. Okay. That's good. And I'm sure if in a year you come back on the show, I'll ask again and you'll have a completely different answer.
And then I'm going to say success is signing babies is what it is. And then having those babies tattooed with your signature.
So. How about you, James? Have you updated your answer?
I don't know, man. Like success is walking away from a car crash with half your head ripped off. How's that?
There you go. And walking away from it.
Is that too real for you? What?
Perfect. Cool. So, where can people, I'll start with you, Dave. Where can people find you online?
Sure. Yeah. I'm on social media everywhere as Stole Comic. That's STOLL comics with an S, not an X. I'm not that cool. And that's everywhere on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram, all social media. StoleComics@gmail and StoleComics.com is my portfolio site. So that's where I am.
Cool. And James?
Yeah.
Where's the best place for people to find stuff for you online?
I'm at everything at James C. Maddox. Because my middle name is Christopher, and James Maddox was taken by a country singer. That's kind of weird.
Is that an alternate country persona?
I don't know. Like, I want to meet this guy and just be like, listen, give me your domain, please.
Just give me it. Give me it, please.
Just give me all the things, because I have to keep saying the C and then explaining why it's a C, and it's not good for my brand, okay? I don't normally explain things. Did you hear the elevator pitch scenario? I just don't.
That's jamescmaddox.net.
Actually, I got the .net. That's just jamescmaddox.net. But everything else, okay. Yeah, that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing.
And your next country album will be out next year?
yeah, we're shooting for next year. I have my doubts about the A&R people they set us up with, but, you know.
And, of course, then Webtoons is the best place for anyone to get their hands on Metaphorical Her.
Yeah, okay, that would be correct. Yes. Yeah, if you go there, you can sign up and get notified when – you know, the next episode drops. We always release a new episode on Saturday. It's like guaranteed on Saturday, but for real, it drops like late Friday.
It's like Friday at 9 p.m., I think.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, gentlemen. Well, if you don't have anything else you would like to add, I think we can put a pin in it for now.
No, thank you for having us on.
Yeah, no problem. So. Thank you for coming on. And as always, boys and girls, thanks for listening. And don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week.